Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
These are a few of my favorite things. And today is a favorite things episode of Free for All Friday. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today we're taking questions from our supporters at TrentHornPodcast.com. Now, normally when people from TrentHornPodcast.com submit questions to me, it's on apologetics. You know, how do I answer atheism? How do I reconcile Bible difficulties? And if you want to be able to submit questions like these for open mailbag episodes, consider becoming a patron at TrentHornPodcast.com. If you're a gold level subscriber or higher, your questions get priority placement, and you get a mug with the Council of Trent logo on it, which is awesome. But even for as little as $5 a month, you get access to bonus content, the exclusive ability to comment on episodes, to message me, and sneak peeks of my upcoming content, such as audiophile versions of my books like Counterfeit Christ. I just uploaded a chapter there on how to reply to the Jewish view of Jesus, sneak peeks of my courses at the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics. Lots of great stuff. You don't want to miss it. Go to TrentHornPodcast.com, or also a great way to help the podcast, leave a review on Google Play or iTunes. That helps people to see the podcast is definitely worthwhile to listen to. But today we're taking questions from our subscribers, and the questions are just, what are my favorite things? And so our subscribers put down a lot of great questions to dive into, so let's get right to it. Here's the first one, a standard one, an oldie but a goodie. What's your favorite food? Now, for a long time, my favorite food was a cheeseburger. And nowadays, I would say that that's my favorite kind of reliable go-to if I'm going to go out to eat and I want to get something reliable and tasty. It's pretty hard to mess up a cheeseburger. And I like how everything's put together. You got the warmth of the cheese, the crispness of the lettuce, maybe a little bacon on there for a special occasion. But honestly, though, when you're doing a cheeseburger, it's hard to make it really awesome. I mean, I've had some great flame-grilled cheeseburgers. There was a place actually in Phoenix. When I used to go at Arizona State University, there was this little restaurant. It was called the Chuck Wagon or the Chuck Box. Chuck Wagon, Chuck Box, can't remember the name. It was right off from Arizona State University. And I had a celebration, a tradition, if you will. Once I was done with my final exams at ASU, I would walk over to the Chuck Box, get a giant cheeseburger that they flame grilled right there. Wonderful toppings. It was great stuff. But honestly, cheeseburgers are good, but it's ground beef. You can't make it an amazing thing. I would say now that my favorite food when I go out and I travel is barbecue. That's why I really enjoy when I get speaking invitations in Texas or Kansas City, because especially Texas, when I can go and get Texas barbecue, man, oh man, am I happy. The closest thing I found to it here in San Diego, there's a little place called Valley Farm Barbecue, and they do amazing ribs. I've told them these are the best ribs I've ever had outside of the state of Texas, and they said we aim to please. So when I can get great barbecue, I'm a happy camper. Ribs are good. I love Texas brisket. Oh, it just melts in your mouth. It's so good. That's why one restaurant I love going to when I can find my way to it is Rudy's, because I go there and I get the brisket, and then they got the cheesy, creamy corn. It's you know, corn, like mixed corn, but it's in this cheesy sauce. Cheesy, creamy corn, brisket, and then they give you just slices of white bread to go along with it. I remember one time I went there, the guy gave me half a bag of white bread. So you basically make these cheesy corn brisket white bread sandwiches. I call it the Napping Express. Always a fun thing to have. Though when I'm at home, I have a little snack that I eat that I also call the Napping Express. That Laura sees me eating this. It's on a Saturday. The kids are down. She'll say, "You want to take a nap? It's 1:30 and the kids are down. You want to take a nap right now?" I say, "Yes. Yes, I do." Because I just take a cereal bar from Trader Joe's, strawberry or blueberry, and then I cover it in Nutella. And it's good. And it's got to be healthy, right? It's Nutella. It's not like I'm some weirdo that just put chocolate on it. I mean, it's Nutella. It's a breakfast food. It's healthy, right? All right, here's the next one. What is the favorite thing my kids do that drives me crazy? I know one thing my kids do that probably drives my wife a little crazy. They've done this thing recently. They're 5 and 3 years old. They'll put their hands on their cheeks and pull their faces down so you see all the red blood vessels under their eyes, and they'll make like this ghostly, ghoulish sound. They'll go like, "Ooh!" And then they want me to do it with them, and then I do it. So it's the two boys and dad where we make our faces very ghoulish and expose the red, bloody part under the eyes and scream, "Woo!" Yeah, I see Laura laughs when they do it, but then she says, that's gross. So, I mean, boys, what are you going to do? But honestly, I think the thing that my kids do that I love and also drives me crazy at the same time is their incessant negotiations. I'll propose something to them and they'll say, well, how about this? And we'll get into this negotiation battle. But honestly, I'm okay with that because that may serve them well as they get older in life, that they become really good negotiators. But sometimes they'll be talking to me, well, you said this, but you should do this. And I think, oh, he makes a really good point. I'm kind of backed into a corner on this one. Oh, the son of an apologist ends up being really good at arguing with people. Who would have ever thought that? Funny thing, actually, my son goes to this little thing called Music Farm, and it's for little kids, preschool, early elementary, and they get to play with animals and sing songs. It's so fun. But their teacher who runs it, she says, I have two boys in my class who just love to stand up and give talks to everybody. And their names are Luke Staples and Matthew Horn. Huh. I wonder what they have in common. All right, here's the next question. What is your favorite episode of The Simpsons? If you've listened to the podcast for a while, you know that I have a habit of making Simpsons references, and I love the episodes between season 2 and season 9, so there's so many great ones to pick from. But one for humor that sticks out in my mind is Marge versus the Monorail. That's season 4, episode 12. Conan O'Brien was the writer on that episode, and he did a great job. I like Conan O'Brien's kind of zany, goofy humor. I'm not a big fan of late night talk show hosts, but I've always enjoyed the Conan O'Brien show, so I like the different gags that he puts in the episode. There's a great celebrity cameo with Leonard Nimoy as Spock. Phil Hartman is an excellent voice talent as Lyle Landley, the snake oil monorail salesman who sells a monorail to Springfield that they don't need, that ends up being decrepit, poorly maintained, and it's about to crash with Homer as the conductor of the monorail, making things even worse. So that to me is a funny episode. It's got a great song in it, the monorail song that'll get stuck in your head. So definitely an episode worth watching. But another favorite episode of mine that's not for humor as much as it is, it gives me kind of the emotional gut punch, is Maggie Makes Three. That's season 6, episode 13. And it's the story about, it's a flashback episode. And usually flashback episodes are not that great, but this one I really enjoy. It explains why they don't have pictures of Maggie at the Simpson household. And so Homer tells his kids that when it was just Lisa and Bart, he quit his job at the nuclear plant and like he played the bongos in Mr. Burns' head. He drove out in a golf cart. He threw a match behind him, setting a bridge on fire, literally burning his bridges. But when Maggie was born, they couldn't pay the bills. So he had to go crawling back to Mr. Burns. And Burns takes him back at his job at the nuclear power plant, but gives him this humiliating plaque to keep in his office. He says, don't forget, you're here forever. So Homer's supposed to be humiliated. He's got this plaque that says, don't forget, you're here forever. But at the end of the episode, we see that all the pictures of Maggie that were taken from the house, Homer puts them over the plaque to hide some of the letters. So instead of saying, don't forget, you're here forever, it says, do it for her. And it's all the pictures of Maggie. And as a dad, as a provider, it always brings a tear to my eye whenever I see that episode. So I love when The Simpsons can be funny and heartfelt in that way. So those are my favorite Simpsons episodes. Here's the next one. My favorite Simpsons character is a reference to that. What is my favorite Simpsons character? I mean, how many characters are there in The Simpsons? There's got to be what? Hundreds? How do you pick from that? For me, my favorite character is my favorite villain on The Simpsons because I love villains. I really feel like you can't have a great film or television show without a great villain. If you don't have a great villain, it's just not worth watching. Villains kind of make the story. And so I love that The Simpsons has Mr. Burns, who is a villain, who is a multifaceted villain that isn't just pure evil, but it's this weird, caring, callous kind of evil that has just hilarious bits about it. I especially love how Mr. Burns, when he gets mad at people, he always like comes up with these insults that make him sound like a 19th century railroad baron. To give you an idea of why I like Mr. Burns, here's a clip where he's going on a tandem bike ride with his assistant Smithers, and Smithers gets a bee on his eye that is about to sting him, and Burns can't bother to pedal to get him to a hospital. So here's how the scene goes.
Perhaps you could pedal for just a little while, sir.
Quite impossible. I can try to bat him off if you like.
Really, that's okay.
Holy cats, man, we're starting to wobble.
Get me to a hospital. You have to pedal.
Do tuttle Sunday trousers. Fear not. I'll get you to a hospital. The only way I know how. Smithers, you infernal ninny, stick your left hoof on that flange now! Now, if you can get it through your bug-addled brain, jam that second mephitic clodhopper of yours on the right doodad! Now pump those scrawny chicken legs, you stuporous funker!
One more jostle, you wretched shirkaday! Die!
One more jostle, you wrecked shirkaday. That's what I love. So Mr. Burns' favorite character there. Who is your favorite Marvel Comics superhero and why? I don't feel competent to answer the question on Marvel Comics because I wasn't a big Marvel Comics fan growing up. I didn't read a lot of Marvel Comics. I read DC Comics, which I'll get to here shortly. So I can't really say like a favorite Marvel Comics character. I did enjoy reading The Punisher a little bit, and I love the old Punisher films. There's the old one with Dolph Lundgren way back, probably like from the 80s. That's a hilarious one. And then another one more recently with John Travolta as the bad guy and Thomas Jane as the Punisher. It's got a lot of cheesy moments. The part where John Travolta dies in the new Punisher reboot, the way he's screaming, it's so hilariously bad. If you want a so bad it's good kind of movie, or a movie, the new Punisher with Thomas Jane and John Travolta, it's at a level where I would be fine having it on in the background when I'm doing stuff. That's where I would put that movie's quality. So I can't really say, but when it comes to the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, my favorite character within that universe, it's going to be Ant-Man because he's played by Paul Rudd. And he's just like, to me, Paul Rudd's a national treasure. I love the way he acts. And every time he shows up there, it just makes it so much fun. I mean, Marvel's fun enough as it is. So he just brings a wonderful lightheartedness to the MCU without being insufferably goofy. So it's a great balance. Love having Paul Rudd there. That's what makes Ant-Man one of my favorite characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's why I enjoy movies like Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is a great, probably for me, the best standalone film in the MCU. When you have a film that just stands on its own versus something like Infinity War, Endgame. If you disagree with me, that's fine. Leave a comment at trendhornpodcast.com if you do, but that's what I enjoy. And this episode's about my favorite things. Here's the next one. My favorite non-Catholic theologians, past and present. So two that popped in my mind, one is past and the other's present. One of them who is past, he just passed away a few years ago, actually. His name is Jacob Neusner. He is an expert on Judaism. He's written like 900 books or articles or edited anthologies. He's one of the most prolific writers in religious studies, if not nonfiction itself. He actually wrote a book with Pope Benedict XVI, or Pope Benedict XVI has commented on Neusner's work. And I appreciate that Neusner doesn't just paper over Jesus, but he takes Jesus seriously, saying, look, if Jesus is who he said he was a bad Jew. And so Pope Benedict says, good, we can't just paper over it. If he was not who he said he was a bad Jew. But if he was who he said he was, then he's the Lord. But Neusner has a lot of great insight on Judaism in the time of Jesus. I enjoy reading his works. The other one who is present would be an Orthodox theologian, Timothy Ware, who later changed his name to Callistos Ware. If you want a great introduction to Eastern Orthodoxy, I highly recommend the writings of Callistos Ware, someone you would definitely enjoy. But back to comic book characters, we talked about Marvel. Who's my favorite DC Comics superhero? Got to go with The Flash. I love Batman, but I kind of identify with The Flash a bit more. And I've read a lot of DC Comics over the years. I love the sci-fi elements and the time travel paradoxes and the weird things that end up in Flash comics. Flashpoint is a wonderful series, which they may hopefully turn into a live-action movie soon, which I hope they do, by the way. Flashpoint is when Barry Allen goes back in time in order to save his mother, but he creates an alternate timeline where everything, because his mother had been killed by the Reverse Flash previously, so he goes back in time to save his mom, but he creates a new timeline where everything's totally messed up. So I love those kind of elements, you know, science fiction, time travel, weird metahumans you have to deal with. And so that's why I really enjoyed the Flash TV show on the CW. Now, disclaimer, I have not watched it actually in over a year because the formula became very derivative and repetitive, so I just stopped caring. But for a while, I loved Arrow, and then I really enjoyed The Flash when it came about and the little crossovers that they had. A great TV commentary on this is the Honest Trailers. If you listen to Free For All Fridays and other elements for a while from me, you'll know I enjoy the comedy of Honest Trailers. They have an Honest Trailer for the Flash TV series, and it does summarize my attitude toward it pretty well.
When Arrow started taking itself way too seriously, it was time to dust off one of DC's campiest heroes for a spin-off that combines the most ridiculous stuff in the comics with soap opera drama.
When I'm looking into her eyes, it's hard not to think that she's feeling the same way I do.
Wacky villains, bright colors, and ridiculous sci-fi in a show that really shouldn't work, but somehow ended up being super fun? Holy crap, am I a Flash fan now? I am! Run faster, Barry! You run at that giant shark man!
So that's what I enjoy from the comics. Here's the next one. What is my favorite musical? I enjoy musicals. I've actually been in a few musicals doing musical theater production. And my favorite musical is probably Les Mis, which is based on the Victor Hugo novel Les Miserables. I love Les Mis and Les Miserables because it's a wonderful story about grace and faith and the law. It's just a great story about grace, about how one person tries to find salvation through the law and ultimately cannot be saved through that. That would be the antagonist, Inspector Javert. And how Jean Valjean finds salvation through grace instead of that. And so my favorite rendition of it is the 10th anniversary Broadway edition. So you have the 10th anniversary cast and the 25th anniversary cast. I'm fond of the 10th anniversary cast. But I was so disappointed, though, when they made Les Mis the movie and I went and saw it because it just wasn't that good, mostly because the singing wasn't up to par. Hollywood actors just aren't trained in that way, so they just can't do the song's justice that it deserves. And the best example of that, of course, is that in Les Mis, they have Russell Crowe playing Javert, Inspector Javert. Now, I'll give you this. Russell Crowe looks like Javert. If you look at someone, you say, is that Inspector Javert? I'm sure they thought to themselves, yes, that is Javert. I mean, look at him. He looks the part, but he can't sing the part very well. And to show you why, I'll play a clip from Russell Crowe from the film version of Les Mis, and then Philip Kwas from the 10th anniversary rendition of Les Miserables. So here's Crowe's version of what is the most famous song that Javert sings, Stars. Here's how Crowe sings it.
This I swear by the stars.
Okay, so I mean, I give him points that he's trying, but he's totally off on the last tone there. So now, here's how Philip Kwas does it. Bravo, bravo, bravissimo. Now, I get some people will say, well, Trent, that's not a fair comparison. Russell Crowe was taking a softer approach with Stars than how other Javerts would traditionally do it. Still, no, I'm sorry. I know what I like. I know what I like. And that's the 10th anniversary concert edition of Les Mis, of Les Miserables. All right, here's the next one. What is my favorite icon? My favorite icon is one of the Holy Family. I forget the precise name of it. If I find it online, I'll link to it at trenthornpodcast.com. But it's an image of the Holy Family. Joseph is at his woodworking table in his shop. Jesus is sitting at his feet stacking blocks. He's only like 2 or 3 years old. And then Mary is on the right side of the frame holding like a glass of water or a glass of milk for Joseph. And I just love that symbol of the Holy Family and how the family is the domestic church. So I want to keep accruing icons, especially since we haven't been able to go to church as much this year. I asked our priest about it. I said, I'm really bummed, you know, when the churches have been shut down here, what do we do? And he said, look, your job as a father is to create a domestic church in your home. And the way you can do that from the Eastern tradition is just to put up icons everywhere. And so I love setting up our icon corner. I should put up icons all over the house to be able to have. But that one is just my favorite to show holiness in those simple moments of life that we can emulate. Next one, what is my favorite childhood memory? I have two. One is going to Hometown Buffet to eat Thanksgiving dinner. Who needs to do dishes, right? You go to Hometown, you could get as many cookies and ice cream as you want, macaroni, turkey, all for like what, $8.99, $10.99? Rest in peace, buffets, because of COVID-19. I earnestly hope and pray that after COVID is over, that in a few years, the buffet will return. I have faith in America, faith in Americans, and their propensity to sometimes eat a little bit too much, that the buffet will be back. That was a favorite childhood memory of mine. We would go out to eat for Thanksgiving, and we ate at Hometown, no dishes. It was great. Oh, but the other memory I have is there was this hill at a park by my house. So I used to live in Encinitas, California, kind of a sleepy little town. It's become pretty touristy now, but if you're there, go to D Street in Encinitas. On the hill overlooking the ocean, there is a park there with play equipment, and my dad would take me and my brother and sister there all the time. We could walk. We lived maybe like 5 minutes away from the park, And I loved just going there with my siblings, my dad, and playing. And I would climb up the hill by the park, and there were these big trees. And I remember, like, from my perspective, when I was 5 years old, climbing up that hill, I thought there was a forest next to the park. And then when I came back as an adult, it was all tiny. That happens to you, right? You think things are, when you were a kid, everything seems larger than life. And you remember it being so big and grand. And then you come back as an adult, you're like, oh, this is really small. But that one always sticks out for me. Here's a good one. What is your favorite period of art? When I went to Paris with my wife for the first time, we got to go to the three big art museums there. You had the Louvre, which is ancient and medieval art going up to about the 18th century. The Orsay, which is 18th and more, it's 19th century art. And then the Pompidou, Le Pompidou. That's 20th century postmodern art, and it's garbage. It's terrible. A lot of it was blank white canvases, a tire on the ground that somebody calls art. I hated it. The Louvre, it's nice. You go see the Mona Lisa. It's the size of a postage stamp. Not literally, but it is really small. The Louvre is nice. But I love the Orsay because the Orsay had 19th century Impressionist art. And I love Impressionism. So Impressionism, according to Wikipedia, is an art movement characterized by relatively small, thin yet visible brushstrokes, open composition, accurate depictions of light and its changing quality and ordinary subject matter. The most famous Impressionist painting you'll be able to think of is Van Gogh's Starry Night. And so I love that. The works of Claude Monet, Renoir. Just look up Impressionism and watch the different Impressionist paintings. What I love about them, how they're different than Renaissance art or early medieval art, is that in order to get the full understanding of what the artist wants to convey, you have to piece kind of the pieces together because it's not painted, obviously. It's not painted with photorealism. It's an impression that you draw from it. And I just really enjoy the interaction I have when I look at an Impressionist painting. I feel like I get drawn into it more so than I do with something that's a bit more photorealistic. In fact, the name Impressionism comes from one of Claude Monet's paintings. It's called Impression Sunrise. And the term Impressionism came from a critic at the time, Louis Leroy, who coined the term in a satirical review of Monet's work in a Parisian newspaper. So I enjoy Impressionist paintings. I think that they're very elegant. They have wonderful beauty to them. And you should go look them up online and see if you agree. If not, well, everybody's a critic, I guess. Here's the other one. What is your favorite ride at Disneyland? Ooh, that's a great question because I talk about Disney all the time. What is my favorite Disney ride? My favorite ride at Disneyland is the Haunted Mansion. Now, a lot of people will say Space Mountain, Splash Mountain. I love thrill rides, but I love the Haunted Mansion because it's the best ride at Disneyland to draw you into a story. There's so many intricate pieces of Imagineering and decoration and display that go on. And what's interesting about the Haunted Mansion, if you've ever been to Disneyland, the Haunted Mansion, the ride is really two different rides because two different sets of Imagineers had plans for it. Some people wanted it to be a really run down, scary kind of place. In fact, they went to Walt Disney and said, we want it to look like a really spooky house. And he said, no, that won't look good in our park. You take care of the outside, we'll take care of the inside. So they wanted the outside to look like a wonderful southern plantation type style that was not run down. But then the inside is all run down and creepy. So the beginning of the ride, it kind of comes off as kind of more creepy elements. And the back half of the ride were the other set of Imagineers who wanted it to be more fun and goofy. But just to give you an idea of how it draws you in, here's just part the beginning of the Haunted Mansion theme. And notice how just even using these musical notes draws you into the mood of the attraction. It's beautiful, right? And then I love the narrator who comes on. When you're in the stretching room and you realize you're locked in, your cadaverous pallor betrays an aura of foreboding, as though you sense a disquieting metamorphosis. It's a great ride. My kids love it, but they always hang on to me tight in the beginning because they're scared. But I think kids like a good scare every now and then. Next up, my favorite board game. My favorite board game is probably Awkward Family Photos. So Awkward Family Photos is the website. They have family photos that are awkward, that don't really turn out well. People are dressed in strange outfits or weird expressions or placement. And so your job in Awkward Family Photos is to come up with captions for these photos that people find to be the funniest. So I enjoy that. I used to play this game Secret Hitler for a while. That's kind of like Mafia. It's a game of deception where you're playing with cards and you don't reveal who you truly are, whether you're a member of the fascist party or the liberal party, or you're actually Hitler. But like Mafia, it relies on deception, and I'm so bad at this. I do not have a poker face. Don't play poker with me. I used to play poker when I was younger. I traveled to Vegas and I played poker once till 7 in the morning. I couldn't do it anymore, at least not with friends, because I can't bluff. I can't deceive. So everybody, whenever I'm Hitler or a secret fascist in the game, they find me out quickly, and so I just don't like the game. Next, my favorite musical artist. I don't really have a favorite. I just have a favorite genre that all of them fall into, and that's easy listening music you might hear when you're waiting in the doctor's office. So the first one I wrote on the list that came to my mind was Peter Cetera from the group Chicago. Phil Collins is another one. He's probably tied with Peter Cetera. Michael Bolton would be a runner-up. And so it's just insufferable. I know it's bad. It's a guilty pleasure of mine, but for some reason, it just makes me feel good to hear it. Next time I fall in love, because she's an easy lover, she's got a hold on you, believe it, said I loved you but I lied. You could string them all together into one song and not really tell the difference there. So that's the kind of music that I enjoy. My artists I put up there: Peter Cetera, Phil Collins, Michael Bolton. At my job, I have to use brain power and think about stuff all the time that can get a tad bit complex. So when I listen to music, I want stuff that just makes me feel good, that I really don't have to think about very much. The next one is my favorite place in nature. Well, I live in San Diego, so I'm going to go with the beach. Whenever I have the chance, I love taking my kids to the beach. We always have this tradition when our kids are like 6 months old, when they're very little, we take them to the beach and we put their feet in the ocean for the first time, and they cry like nobody's business, because we're on the Pacific Ocean where the water is cold, and it is cold here year round. It takes about 15 to 60 seconds to get used to the water in the Pacific Ocean, depending on what time of year it is, but it's always cold. But if I can lay on the beach and just hear the water rushing over, you know, the crashing waves or hitting the rocks on the jetty, that always makes me feel so at calm and at peace. What's my favorite movie? Star Wars. Star Wars is my favorite movie. Now, my favorite movie isn't saying that it's the best movie or the most artistic movie. In fact, of the Star Wars trilogy, Empire Strikes Back is the best of the original trilogy. It's the best of all of them. Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars film. But A New Hope, Episode 4, aka Star Wars, that's my favorite one. That's just my favorite one. It's a wonderful hero's journey. And as a kid, the very first time that I saw Luke Skywalker in the trench battle and he's gearing up to fire the photon torpedoes to destroy the Death Star, I'm like, do it! You could do it! And so now I am finally watching Star Wars with my kiddos, and it's all come full circle. And I am so happy. I actually, you know what's funny with Star Wars? I plan to show it to them in this order: episodes 4, 5, 2, 3, 6. Because I believe you can show at least, like, let's say you're showing an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old for the first time. I still think that's the best order. 4, 5, then you find out that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. Then you want to know, how did he become Luke Skywalker? How did he become Darth Vader? Episodes 2, 3. Maybe Clone Wars in there before that. I'm not sure. We do episodes 2, 3. Then episode 6, Return of the Jedi, to cap it all off. But I have little kiddos, 5 and 3. I thought I'd have to wait a few more years to show it to them. But I told them about Star Wars, and they're like, can we see Star Wars? And I said, yes. Yes, you can. So I just started them with episode 1 because I wanted to see how they would handle it. I do believe episode 1 is one of the most kid-friendly of the Star Wars films, and they liked it. So that was the green light for us to continue going and watching it. And as I watched the prequels, I realized, you know what? Yeah, they're not good, but at least George Lucas was trying to do Star Wars instead of just rehashing Star Wars like J.J. Abrams. At least he was taking risks. But when you watch episode 1, you see how they really should have held Lucas back. Because when Lucas was doing, when they were doing the original Star Wars trilogy, Lucas wasn't just the mastermind over it. He had to work with other people. They had different script writers. It was a true collaboration that brought everything together to make it really good. But then when Lucas had complete control over the project, nobody could ever really stand up to him or tell him no. So there's a great documentary you should watch online called The Beginning, and it's a behind-the-scenes documentary of episode 1, The Phantom Menace, and you see it's like a train wreck in slow motion. You see where episode 1 goes wrong. Lucas is bad at the casting choices. There were other kids who would have been good Anakins, and he picked the Anakin that was actually not super good. So when he was in charge, he just had too much power. If he had just let other people have the reins on things, it could have been a much better film. And you see this at the very end of the documentary, in The Beginning, where Lucas watches the first cut of the film in his screening room, and he's really frustrated by it, and he feels defeated. Here's his response to it.
It's a little disjointed.
Seems like a lot of short scenes.
It's bold in terms of jerking people around, but I may have gone too far in a few places.
Truer words were never spoken. All right, next on the list, my favorite video game system. So for me, Super Nintendo. Now, when I was in college, I played a lot of Xbox. So when I was in college and I was single, especially when I moved out and I got my first apartment, I would go into the office and I would work from like 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. I think I already did the episode on generations, typical millennial, right? Sleeps in, works late. Got home. I was a single guy, you know, a bachelor. So I would heat up my dinner. And then from 7:30 till about midnight or 1 in the morning, I would play Halo. And I think this was Halo 3 that I was playing. And it was cool because I had a lot of friends in Arizona. I left them behind. I went to Kansas to do pro-life work. And so I was lonely at some point, so I could connect with them over Xbox Live when we would play video games together. But even still, my favorite, I had a lot of good memories from there. My favorite is still Super Nintendo, playing Super Mario World, Star Fox, F-Zero. So many great games. Street Fighter. I mean, this particular sound from Street Fighter, booting it up, Street Fighter 2, The World Warriors. This might bring back nostalgia for you. It definitely brings it back for me. I've probably heard this theme hundreds, if not thousands of times. And it's like, yeah, it's time to fight. I'm gonna get Ken, do the Hadouken, Shoryuken. And yes, I was more of a Ken fan than a Ryu fan because Ken's uppercut was better. Last two, my favorite family tradition. For our family now, we pray the vocation icon prayer. In our Byzantine parish, every family gets, you take turns with the vocation icon. Each week you give it to a new family and you pray that week the vocation icon prayers for new vocations. But what was very providential was that with COVID-19, we were the last family to get the icon before everything got shut down here in California. And now because of COVID restrictions, we can't really give it to other families, or we haven't been asked to give it to anyone. It's just, well, hang on to it during this pandemic. So we've got to pray that icon prayer so long, much longer than any family in our parish's history, probably. And so that's become a great tradition. And when we do give the icon back, once we can have the tradition again of giving it to other families, once the pandemic passes, then I think we'll just buy the icon, a copy of it to keep in our own home. I also have a little tradition with my kiddos when I go off to work. I put out my hands. I used to do this when they were like 2 years old and they still do it. And I really hope they never stop. They give me my money, phone, wallet, and my cards, except they don't actually give it to me. I just hold out my hand, my palm, and they put their hand in my palm and pretend to drop things in the palm of my hand. And I go, guys, I'm going to work. And they come over, they go, money, phone, wallet, cards. And then Matt does that. And I go, Thomas, I'm going to work. And he comes over, he goes, oh, okay, money, phone, wallet, cards. And he gives it to me so that I'm ready to go to work. So I hope that we keep doing it. I don't care if they're 17 years old. I'm going to say, Matt, I'm going to work. Okay, Dad, money, phone, wallet, cards. Thank you, Matthew. And the last question, my last favorite. What is my favorite thing about my wife? My favorite thing about my wife, I'm going to be honest with you. My favorite thing about my wife is that she's funny. That's what sealed the deal for me when we were dating. When I had dated nice ladies, nice Catholic ladies, but it just didn't work out. Holy Catholic women. But to meet a holy Catholic woman who could just make me belly laugh, I remember when we were first dating, I had this total belly laugh moment with Laura, and I just knew she was the one. In fact, Matt Frad, host of Pints of Aquinas, well-known Catholic apologist in his own right, Matt Frad will tell you, Laura Horn is the funniest woman you'll ever meet in your entire life. So ask Matt Frad about Laura Horn, and he will tell you she's the funniest woman. And I will tell you she's the funniest woman. That's what should matter. But of course, she's holy. She keeps me in check. She keeps me grounded. That's why I love having a family with her, and I love the family that I've inherited through her, my in-laws. Those are some of my favorite moments, getting to spend my time with them, and I get to see them soon. They might visit us here in California very soon, and that is some of my favorite things when I get to see my in-laws, the Catholic family I never had growing up, but I get to have now that I love oh so much. Hey, thank you guys so much. This was really fun. I hope you got to enjoy learning a little bit more about me. And love to learn more about you if I can meet you. Whenever we get to do public speaking again, love to meet you, learn more about you if you're a patron of the podcast at an event. Just let me know. Thank you all so much, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.